CBSI on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Chris Riegel is the CEO of Scala.com, a global technology firm watching the globe for recovery from the pandemic, for adjusting to the worldwide recession and the war in Europe, and the question of China's falling GDP. Chris, because he has business on all the continents, is a wonderful barometer of how we're doing quite outside of the statistics we get from Washington. So, Chris, I begin in China because anecdotally these last days I've learned that in the Pearl River Valley, which describes, I'm told, the major manufacturing nexus in China, high-end electronics, consumer goods, the Pearl River Valley, the municipalities, the cities, the towns and villages have not been paying their teachers, their firefighters, their nurses, their full salary, sometimes just a piece of it, but not the extra bonus that people count on. The disorder here is because people do not know why this is happening. These are civic workers. These are not manufacturing workers. However, you've told me over these last months that there are questions about factories having enough orders to maintain their workforce. We were watching very carefully how many people came back after the New Year celebrations. Right now, does your information about manufacturing comport with this information in them, that the municipalities are out of money? They're turning their pockets out saying, we don't have it. Look to the central government. Good evening to you, Chris.
Good evening, John. Certainly two things happening in China. You're seeing at the provincial level, many of those provinces having, call it cash flow problems, because those provinces have immense debt of lending in some areas to kind of gray activities, but the cities that no one occupies or other things. So there's a municipal credit crunch and problem there, number one. Number two, if you track outbound container shipments from China, you've seen year to date a decline of between 30 and 35%. So while the Chinese government will say everything's great, nothing to see here, and is being very aggressive in the propaganda towards trying to show full ports and lots of things moving out of China, the reality is that exports from China are noticeably down, and that's also having a tag-on effect to driving some economic challenges within the country.
And the puzzle about unemployment, the numbers are never trustworthy from China. I'm told that if we treat China as a normal manufacturing hub exporting to the world, that inflation was running so high that the number reported 3% in range for GDP is actually to be interpreted as a negative number. Do you hear these as well, that China's GDP was actually negative and that they're coming out of a deep hole?
I would say that's probably accurate. It's very hard to say because the numbers are never accurate coming from the government. However, if you look at the input stocks, whether that be iron ore from Australia or consumption of energy, those input stocks would signal that there's likely a negative number on GDP in China because the inputs are down. And you can't have output up with imports down, number one. Number two, if you're starting to kind of hone in on what's happening in China at the tech side, the restrictions that have been put in place by the Biden administration over the last 3 or 4 months are starting to very heavily hit the Chinese market, where now you cannot buy or deploy modern tools for semiconductor manufacturing in China. Many of those have to be imported to China. So the export bans from U.S., from Europe, from Japan are starting to have a very material impact on the Chinese economy as well.
Now we come to an article you guided me to and a comment from Hideo Tanimoto, president of Kyocera, to the Financial Times in these last days. He says that if chip equipment makers stop shipments to China, our orders will be somewhat affected. They are now even being asked not to ship their non-cutting-edge tools. Please interpret this for me. What is happening about the high-end chip makers in China that is different?
So, John, the visibility has been to the high-end chip makers, those that are under a 28-nanometer process, which would be considered very modern or advanced chips, and all of those tools being banned. The Kyocera article is very interesting because Kyocera makes chips that are in everyday things that you use, your microwave, your refrigerator, your vehicle, all sorts of kind of secondary tier two, tier three chips. And the Kyocera president is now saying, effectively, you cannot do chip manufacturing in China, and they're building new factory in Japan to be able to make those chips. So you're seeing a wholesale shift, not only on the advanced portions of the chip market, but on the secondary and tertiary markets. And that does not bode well for Chinese growth long term, because those chips go into secondary products that China exports in volume. If you don't have the chips, you can't build the secondaries.
So we talk at the high end, and that translates into you can't build finished manufacturing products such as automobiles because you're not at the high end. And that translates into manufacturers not having enough in their order book or not being able to meet customers' demands, so customers look elsewhere. That translates into unemployment, and that leads to the municipalities not having the revenue or not having the confidence to pay their teachers. Does that chain all make sense? And it tells me that it starts at the top, doesn't it? It just starts in Beijing.
Absolutely. I think it's what you're now seeing is the net effect. Supply chains always trail economic and or political policies that will hit those supply chains. So you're seeing now in the supply chain, in the tech sector specifically, that the effect of sanctions, the effect of not selling in tools and not allowing global companies to practice in China in the semiconductor manufacturing business is having a material economic impact. And you're seeing global economies, not just the US, but Japan, other markets, start to say China is no longer viable as a manufacturing hub. And that's a big shift economically when you're seeing companies like Apple moving out of China to India and to Vietnam, because not only is it an issue of national security or economic competition, but also the costs in China have come up dramatically over the last 10 years. So you may be able to say an assembly worker in India is a fraction of the cost of that assembly worker in China. And some of these global brands seek to find that lowest cost skilled labor.
Checking on Europe, the rosy scenario is it will avoid a recession. Fine. You have business to business in Europe. Do you see a revival of order in the order book, or are they still keeping their heads down?
Europe is starting to emerge a bit, but still very, very cautious, especially in the German market, where the concerns about the economic impact of not having access to cheap energy continue to reverberate through the economy as they try to reset and figure out what the new normal will be.
Now we come to America, where you and I both watch several parts of the economy. There's the residential real estate. We know that's gone through a bad patch, and interest rates are at 7 or higher now, slowing it down the more. You bring to my attention commercial real estate. The headline in the Wall Street Journal, office landlord defaults are escalating as lenders brace for more distress. You started reporting on this during the depths of the pandemic in the spring, summer of 2020, the empty office buildings. It was a ghost city. I walked through it for a year, and I'm looking at buildings now that are no more filled now than they were then during the depths of the pandemic. This is New York City. Is that special, or is it happening in cities across America, Dayton, Columbus, St. Louis, Milwaukee? I know it's true in Los Angeles.
It's impacting the tier one cities most heavily because they have the highest costs for those buildings. So you're seeing commercial real estate companies and developers that are giving back buildings to the banks because they're no longer sustainable. So walking away from some of these securities, then you'll see trouble in the commercial mortgage-backed security market in the next 6 months, 12 months. In the tier two cities, a Dayton, a Kansas City, a St. Louis, the pressure is the same because the model of having everyone in the office has shifted, but the financial pressures aren't quite as bad because the costs were never as high. But the same danger applies, which is, do you need the same amount of commercial space in this new world?
And the road ahead is not clear, according to these articles, because the hybrid nature of office work these days, I know that's true in Manhattan, different companies are making decisions. I understand, I don't want to generalize, but 5 days a week is no longer something that's routine. It's very rare. Fast food franchises and luxury franchises, they would feel it if the cities are not back in at full employment in the office buildings. Are they expressing doubts?
John, what you're seeing in many of the large corporations is a swing of the pendulum back to the employer side. So during the pandemic, when employees were very difficult to get, paying very high prices, the employees had great power in those negotiations. Today, the pendulum has swung fully back towards the employers. You're seeing in many, many large companies, large layoffs, thousands or tens of thousands as they right-size for this recession. With that, employers are saying now you have to come back to the office. You're back in 4 days at minimum. And we're seeing that much more across the board as they're kind of cracking down and stating if you don't like that, then that's a condition of your employment. So with the pendulum swinging back, employers are becoming much more focused and much more hard knuckled on those kind of points. That will change the workforce yet again to see who stays, who goes. But you're, with the number of layoffs that are happening, the employees no longer have the upper hand in those dialogues.
Chris Riegel is the CEO of Scala.com, a global technology firm transforming the retail space with digital signage. This is the Scala Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
What happened to her, Mario? How could she simply disappear after she was with you?
I don't have answers for that.
48 Hours at CBS News present.
I'm just going to ask you straight out. Did you kill Christy Wilson?
No, I had nothing to do with her disappearance.
Another season of My Life of Crime with Erin Moriarty. Award-winning correspondent Erin Moriarty brings you face-to-face with killers.
I will never say that I'm a cold-blooded killer. I'll never say I'm a murderer.
And the people they took from.
My son died running for his life.
This season, follow the evidence with Erin, beyond the speculation, including in the death of boxing legend Arturo Gatti.
My gut says I don't think he would take his life.
I know my husband killed himself.
Listen to My Life of Crime from 48 Hours on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm David Pogue from CBS Sunday Morning. In the new season of my podcast, Unsung Science, you'll meet the discoverers of Ernest Shackleton's shipwreck, Endurance, lost beneath the Antarctic for 100 years.
It looked like the day when it sank. It's just a very good environment down there to conserve a shipwreck.
The woman who invented forensic genealogy and has solved over 150 cold cases.
It's controversial, right? Because you never know if sitting around your Thanksgiving table, there's somebody who's been getting away with murder or rape.
And the NASA engineers who flew a helicopter on Mars.
The density is 1% that of Earth's. 1% air density. It sounds impossible, and it is almost impossible.
It's season 2 of Unsung Science, presented by CBS Sunday Morning and Simon & Schuster. Listen to Unsung Science on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.